From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry. The Harvest Festival in Juneau celebrated another growing season Saturday. Usually there's a long wait list for the four-acre garden, but this year there's space for beginners. New community gardens in Thane and at the Glory Hall shelter mean there's a lot more space to go around. Each year, the Juneau Community Garden celebrates the growing season with a harvest fair, complete with prizes for the best vegetables grown. On a table covered in vegetables, one stands out. It's a turnip with a face made out of carrots. Long stalks of turnip greens fan out around it, and a hook-shaped carrot sits on its head.
Cecile and Sophie Echave are the grand champions with that octopus on the hook.
Sophie and Mateo Echave created Octopus on a Hook. They're this year's youth champions of the Harvest Fair.
Does that say grand champion on it?
Yeah, division champion. And then Juneau Community Garden class champion.
Sophie's 9 years old. Her brother Mateo is five. He's a bit shyer. Both are first-time gardeners. Their mom, Katie, asks what they learned this year.
What did we discover, guys, that we learned?
Larva likes turnips.
When you grow things, you just don't know how it's going to turn out, right?
And they aren't the only first-timers this year, says the garden secretary, Pat McClear. With the first season at the Thane Community Garden underway, the waitlist at the Juneau Community Garden is about half its normal length. The garden has 170 regular plots. Each bed costs $35 a year and requires 5 hours of service in the garden, like helping manage the weeds. Thane's new community garden, with 40 beds so far, has taken some of the pressure off. And now residents at Juneau Shelter, the Glory Hall, have their own community garden too. All this means most people on this year's waiting list have a good chance of getting in. But McClear says people should sign up soon. And if they're hesitating because they don't know where to start, McClear says other gardeners will help them out.
If you're a rookie, you could walk up to anybody who's out and say, we got a minute, and people will give you the minute and help you out.
McClear says there's a wealth of knowledge to tap into around the garden. Both recreational berry pickers and subsistence harvesters across southeast Alaska are worried that wild berries are dwindling. Scientists confirm that human-caused climate change threatens berry plants, but little research has been done to understand exactly how berry bushes are changing with their environment. A new research project at the Sitka Sound Science Center hopes to solve that problem. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Lisa Sadlier-Hart has filled her freezer with berries from her backyard in Sitka for more than 25 years. But this year, that freezer will be a little more empty.
The crop looks terrible. I hardly have any on my bushes.
She said her berry plants grew differently as spring turned to summer.
I noticed that leafing out of the salmon berries seemed to take longer, so it happened later. And then, boy, we sure didn't have the number of flowers and buds that we did last year.
Scientists and harvesters alike believe that berries have declined in recent years as human-caused climate change has reshaped the environment. A new project at the Sitka Sound Science Center will closely monitor berry plants throughout the seasons to help harvesters and Alaska Native households adapt and plan for future harvests under climate change. According to the project's lead researcher, Alex McCarroll, changes in regular temperature, rainfall, and snowfall could disrupt berries because a berry plant's life cycle is precisely tuned to its environment.
When can we expect the berries to ripen, or when is that best week you want to be picking berries, or when are the flowers going to be blooming, or the leaf budding out?
Each moment depends on the way weather unfolds from season to season. The study of those seasonal life stages is known as phenology, and it's the foundation of some of the most important interactions in nature. For instance, a flower will typically bloom when pollinators are awake and hungry. And a knowledgeable harvester will know what time of year a berry bush is most full.
Timing is everything, and that is changing.
To track those changes, McCarroll and her collaborators are pointing trail cameras at berry bushes. All season long, those cameras take thousands of photographs that can capture the precise timing of each critical life stage.
We now have 16 cameras out, so they're monitoring salmon berries, blueberries, and huckleberries this year.
Each camera is placed next to a monitoring device that records precipitation, humidity, and soil temperatures. Together, the photos and the climate data can show how changing conditions affect the berries. The project also engages volunteer harvesters. They return to the same patch once a week to record the number of ripe berries. Those records help McCarroll pin down the timing of maximum berry yield. All that data can be used to strengthen food security. Sadlier Hart is an educator for the Sitka Local Food Network. She said that many rural Alaskans rely on wild berry harvests, especially Alaskan Native households.
What does it now mean if they aren't going to be able to collect and harvest berries at the level historically they've been doing? Because you know what berries cost.
McCarroll hopes that the data she's collecting will help those harvesters adjust their strategies to keep up with a changing climate.
Guess I'll have to go out a week earlier than I did 10 years ago, or I might need to look for better berries higher up, another 500 feet elevation, because my spot's getting too hot, or I didn't have enough snowfall.
And if berry harvesters know how to change, it could help to keep their freezers full. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Alaska has no shortage of marine predators, from orcas to stellar sea lions to salmon sharks. Over the past few years, researchers have identified a new, lesser-known predator that may play a key role in keeping Alaska's kelp forests healthy. KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports.
Third-year PhD student Nikita Schreeder reaches deep into a tank in the basement lab of the Sitka Sound Science Center looking for what she calls an underappreciated predator. These creatures are such effective hunters that when they enter an area...
It's like you can hear their screams underwater, but everyone's just trying to flee the scene.
Schreeder wrestles the creature out of the tank and holds it up to the light. She's holding a dinner plate-sized purple sea star. Sunflower stars, a type of sea star, are the focus of Schreeder's research this summer through her work with Professor Christy Croker at UC Santa Cruz. Schreeder hopes to learn more about how these sea stars could help protect coastal kelp forests. Sea stars may not intimidate us humans, but to a population of sea urchins, they're a formidable predator.
They basically throw their stomachs out, so they lift up their arms, and then part of their stomach from the underside is, like, thrown out, and then they engulf the urchins.
While unfortunate for the urchin, this kind of predation is good for the ecosystem. Urchins eat kelp, and too many urchins can decimate kelp forests that many animals call home.
Basically, are like skyscrapers that create homes for all these different animals.
Keeping those forests healthy requires a balance of kelp-eating grazers like urchins and abalone, and predators like sea stars who eat those grazers.
If you lose one part of this puzzle, so for example, you lose an important predator, then you might have too many grazers.
That's happened before. A decline in the population of sea otters, a well-known predator of urchins and other kelp-eating critters, led to the spread of urchin barrens along the west coast, where urchins have mowed down entire kelp forests. Now, researchers are trying to figure out if and how other predators such as sunflower stars could play a complementary role in protecting kelp forests. Sunflower stars eat urchins, but Schreeder suspects they may also affect urchin behavior in other ways. In her work this summer, she's trying to figure out if the mere presence of a sea star could cause urchins to eat less kelp.
So just sensing this predator might lead to the urchins being scared into eating less kelp. So they might be investing their energy into running away from the predator or hiding in little crevices rather than just like roaming the seafloor, eating kelp as they please.
In the lab, Schreeder situates a caged sunflower star in the center of a tank full of urchins. She wants to see if the urchins move away from the cage or eat less kelp when they sense that a sea star is nearby. Out in Sitka Sound, her team is running similar experiments, tracking the path of a sunflower star and seeing how long it takes for urchins and abalone to return to those spots.
Or whether that slime trail of a sea star is so strong that they're too scared to come back, basically.
If sunflower stars serve as vigilante kelp guardians, that's exciting news for the kelp forests, especially if the sea star population rebounds. Sea star wasting disease has plagued the West Coast over the past decade, dissolving huge swaths of sea stars. Sunflower stars were hit especially hard. Schreeder says they've seen more mature sunflower stars around Sitka Sound this summer than they expected. That is, at least tentatively, cause for celebration.
So it's exciting that we are seeing them this summer, and hopefully these populations persist through time. We'll see.
Schreeder doesn't have results back yet, but she's excited to see how these sunflower stars might help protect kelp forests by creating what she cheerfully calls a landscape of fear for urchin populations. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
This is KTOO. For more stories, go to ktoo.org.